Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it was yesterday that we were generally excited about the fact that House Republicans were actually bringing forth what the president wanted them to bring forth, which was a quote-unquote clean hike in the debt ceiling with no spending restrictions attached, John Boehner and Eric Cantor giving him exactly what he wanted, and the final vote was 318 no's to just 97 yeses. All the yeses were Democrats, so surprisingly 82 Democrats went over to the no, and we'll get to that in just a moment as to maybe why that happened. First of all, Dave Camp, the House Ways and Means Committee chairman, very well laying out exactly why the Obama plan with the debt ceiling is ridiculous.
It sends a clear and critical message that the Congress has finally recognized we must immediately begin to rein in America's affection for deficit spending.
And that's why none of the Republicans could go along with raising the debt ceiling with no restrictions attached. Now, those Democrats that voted against it didn't exactly come forward saying we can't have a clean raising of the debt ceiling. That's ridiculous. That's not fiscally responsible. No. They knew they couldn't all vote for a clean extension of the debt ceiling because that could be potentially political suicide. So here's what Steny Hoyer came up with instead.
It's a good demagogic vote, frankly, ladies and gentlemen. And if we vote for it, guess what? Oh, you're for raising the debt limit without any fiscal discipline. I yield back the balance of my time and urge a no vote on this irresponsible piece of legislation that should have been handled in a bipartisan fashion.
So instead of just admitting that the idea that the president had a few months ago is just a really bad idea, Steny Hoyer says we can't go along with this, even though we've said we liked it in the past, because you didn't play nice. Good explanation, huh?
Yeah, I can't help but notice that Steny Hoyer is complaining that the vote that got 200-some Republicans and 100-some Democrats was insufficiently bipartisan. basically, yeah, he's apparently – it's a demagogic vote. It's a manipulative vote to give the Democrats exactly what they were demanding not too long ago. Right. If you get the feeling we're dealing with petulant children here, there's good reason for that. One of the things I think is kind of fascinating about this is anytime you can get your – opposition's caucus to split down the middle, and this was pretty close to that, you're in good shape. You clearly have something that has a lot of them nervous about this. And you know, there's a question of, all right, so we knew this was never going to pass the House. So what was the point of doing this? Well, this gives Boehner leverage. He can say, look, it's not just the polling is heavily on our side. It's not just my base and the folks in Republican House caucus are going to drive a hard bargain. Half your caucus is in a panic about this. Now, the interesting excuse that we're hearing from a lot of House Democrats is the idea of Hoyer and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC chair, and all these folks said, well, we're going to vote no, and we're instructing our members to vote no. So the defense of the no folks is that even though not too long ago they were calling for raising the debt limit without any associated budget cuts, is that they're automatons. Their leaders told them to vote a certain way, and they did, and that's why they completely reversed themselves. I'm not sure this is quite as exculpatory as they think it is or something. The other thing is, so the natural response is if the Democrats say, oh, we're being ignored, all right, put something on the table. Show us the kind of spending cuts and budget cuts that you're willing to go along with in exchange for a increase in the debt ceiling, and let's see what you got. And I think the idea of the strategy of the Democrats is to just take whatever the Republicans put on there, demagogue it, then ultimately vote for it and say, no, something's got to get passed. Very similar approach to what they're doing to Medicare.
Yeah, exactly.
Demagogue it, don't put anything forth, and just reap the political benefit from painting the other side as meanies without actually, taking any responsibility for finding solutions to tough problems.
Exactly right. And that's a very minor addendum to Martini number one today. Even the Washington Post saying that Debbie Wasserman Schultz's scare tactics related to the Republican Medicare reform plan is just complete bunk. They gave her three Pinocchios, whatever that means, and basically said that her talking points were all wet and basically she had nothing of substance to actually say because
they cited a Cato expert who called that high octane idiocy. And Greg, I don't know about you, I'm just glad to see with gas prices what they are. There's something high octaner in Washington.
That's right.
Can't afford much else.
Exactly. Well, gas prices are still quite high. They've come down a little bit recently, but still unacceptably high. And yesterday we talked about the latest plunge in the housing market. Well, I wish there was only one new bad economic story today. Instead, in Martini number two, we've got a trio of them. First of all, private sector jobs growing apparently by just 38,000 in May. We'll get the official numbers from the Labor Department on Friday, but the expectation was about 108,000. 180,000, so that comes in well below. Other stories suggest that the Fed is ready for a third round of quantitative easing. And if that weren't enough, food stamp recipients are up 39% since President Obama took office. So recovery summer two, here we come.
You took away the punchline, Greg. I was about to offer my own snicker. I think what will be interesting to see, Friday we'll get new jobs numbers. We'll see if the unemployment number moves at all. My guess is it's hard to imagine good movement, but we'll, you know, I guess we'll see what happens. Perhaps mass alien abductions have removed more discouraged workers from the pile there. At the end, at some point, Obama's going to have to address this. And it's going to have to be not just in a, well, we're making progress, we just aren't making progress as fast as, you know. At some point, he's going to have to acknowledge that really his economic policies have been, from where I sit, you know, if not a catastrophic failure, a seriously disappointing failure, that we are still waiting for anything resembling good times under the Obama administration. And for all of the talk and inside the Beltway that Obama is, you know, a heavy favorite and arguably unstoppable for re-election, look, barring some dramatic change, Greg, unemployment for every month of the Obama administration is going to be higher than it's been for every month of the Bush administration. And the Democrats like to paint the Bush days as the bad old days. So, you know, this has been the preeminent problem of the Obama, you know, since Obama took office, is get America back to work, get the economy moving again. And it's just not happening. And, you know, as we talked earlier in the week, the concept of double dip recession kind of implies there was something good in the middle. And I think a lot of Americans are like, whoa, what were the good times? I missed that. Was that a millisecond? I might have been looking at my shoes during our 30 seconds of economic prosperity.
Exactly right. But Jim, don't forget that the president inherited 700,000 jobs lost a month. You know, we're going to hear that over and over and over again as long as,
you know, Obama goes on and on about his inheritance more than Paris Hilton. My guess is that by fall 2012, Americans will be sick of it. That at some point, you have to take responsibility for what's happened on your watch. And, you know, month by month, Obama's watch is getting longer. The Bush days are receding into history. And as I said, looking at the unemployment rate, hey, Bush days are pretty good looking at this.
On to martini number three now. And yesterday, you graciously deferred to me to not do this story because I really didn't
want
to.
What's been in the news lately, Greg?
Oh,
gosh. Anything on CNN, conservative blogs heating up about this? Any Frankfurter-related scandal?
New York Congressman Anthony Weiner. If you don't know the story, this is going to be a very brief recap. Something from his Twitter account, a lewd picture, was sent to one of the few people that he actually follows, which is a college-age student out in Seattle. It is considered a lewd photo, though it's technically clothed, if you get my drift. And this potentially was not necessarily a huge story. Then he decided to announce that his Twitter account was hacked. He didn't actually send this, but is not asking law enforcement to look into it. Instead, he's hired a private counsel. So he met some reporters yesterday on Capitol Hill, and here's the first exchange.
Did you send it or not?
If I were giving a speech to 45,000 people, and someone in the back threw a pie or yelled out an insult, I would not spend the next 2 hours of my speech responding to that pie or that insult.
Also, that didn't answer anything, so here's his clarification.
Can you just say why you haven't asked law enforcement to investigate what you are alleging is a crime?
You know, Dana, if I was giving a speech to 45,000 people, and someone in the back of the room threw a pie or yelled out an insult, would I spend the next 2 hours responding to that?
Jim, it's good that he clarified that because dodging the question the first time didn't quite confuse us enough as to why he is agreeing to continue to talk about this but not admit certain simple things like whether or not it was actually him who sent it, whether or not the picture involved him, how he knows this person, anything. So leave it to the blogosphere to actually try and dig this stuff up because he keeps digging his hole even deeper.
Greg, in this metaphor, isn't he the pie thrower? Obviously, this is what happens when you have really no good excuse, because the fundamental contradiction in this, as put forth by Ace of Spades, who's been doing some great work on this and wants NRO to really focus in on this, is that he's trying to do two things. He's trying to say he's not responsible for sending out the picture, that it was a hack, but at the same time, it's just, you know, it just happens, no big deal, no reason to look at it. And simultaneously, like, he's the victim of crime. Somebody's gotten access to his Twitter account and done something terribly lewd and you know, horrific. But at the same time, this is not a big deal. He's not upset about it. Nobody should worry about it. Let's all just move on. And you can do one or the other. It's very hard to do both of those. When he starts talking about pie throwing in the back of the room and stuff, Greg, I don't know if you're a fan of South Park, but I was immediately reminded of the famous Chewbacca defense, a fictional legal strategy used to cite the fact that Chewbacca, the Wookiee from the Star Wars trilogy, is a Wookiee from the planet Kashyyyk, but Chewbacca lives on the planet Endor. Now, think about it. That does not make sense. Which is to say, bring up something completely irrelevant, not a complete tangent to the matter at hand, and just fill airtime until the audience is completely confused by what the heck the original question was and what the point is, et cetera, et cetera. This is what happens when you have no good excuses. The degree to which Wiener does not answer fairly basic questions like, is that you? Do you recognize the Wiener in question? And he won't answer that. He didn't contact police. There's some fairly basic stuff in which he's saying, look, I'm not going to answer any questions about this. Greg, if you or I had somebody sending out junk pictures on our Twitter, you and I'd be hopping mad and spitting and fury. You know, he seems very weird about this. And I think this is one of those things where you're starting to see the mainstream media really start to say, all right, look, the excuses do not add up. They do not make sense. I have a hard time believing that this is going to end with the mainstream media just kind of shrugging its shoulders and saying, oh, well, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, hopefully the late night joke writers are working without pay this week, because this story just absolutely writes itself. So I'll let them figure out the jokes. I won't try to end on one. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.